Tom Weber on NPR News. A little more now on Governor Dayton's disclosure yesterday that he has prostate cancer. He told reporters that, and he also told them he remains up to the job and plans to finish his term. The governor had been and is getting treatment at Mayo Clinic. A spokesman there noted yesterday that the fainting spell Dayton had Monday night during his State of the State speech was not related to the prostate cancer diagnosis. The fainting was probably from dehydration and because he had been standing for a long time. We thought this would be a good time, though, to get caught up on some of the basics of prostate cancer. Dr. Badrinath Konetty is chair of the Department of Urology at the University of Minnesota. Dr. Konetty, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
The American Cancer Society says other than skin cancer, prostate cancer is the most common cancer in American men. 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed in their lifetime, and that Governor Dayton fits the profile perfectly because he is 69 years old, but that it's also, while it can be fatal, most men don't die from prostate cancer. What would you add when you're telling people the basics about prostate cancer?
As you correctly pointed out, Tom, it is one of the most common cancers affecting American men, and incidence is also going up worldwide. The other thing to remember about prostate cancer is certain subgroups, racial subgroups, are more likely to be affected, particularly with more aggressive prostate cancer. African-American men are more likely to get prostate cancer and also more likely to die of prostate cancer compared to other races. And also, family history of prostate cancer is important, because if your dad or your grandfather had it, and then that's increases the likelihood that a person will also get it.
And the governor said his father did have a diagnosis about the same time in life, and his father lived another 25 years. And so the genetic connection is there. Does that also portend that Governor Dayton, you know, could live himself 25 years on the genetic side of that?
Quite likely. I mean, I don't know the details of his prostate cancer,
sure,
except what has been out in the news, that it's a localized disease. So generally, localized disease has a very good prognosis, and longevity is very good after diagnosis and potential treatment of localized prostate cancer.
With that statistic there, about 1 in 7 will be diagnosed, 1 in 7 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer during his lifetime. I heard a mantra once, doctor, that basically, if you live long enough, if you stay alive and you're a man, you're probably going to get it. First of all, fact check that for me. Is that a fair and accurate thing to say? Do you get where I'm going when I say that? I mean, is that something we should be saying on the radio?
Well, that's something that my patients ask me all the time, and it's a common, urban legend of some sort. There is some truth to that, because at the age of 80, almost 30 to 40% of the men will have prostate cancer if you check their prostates, and in some studies, even up to 50%. So it's not all men will get it, but because most likely all men won't live long enough to get prostate cancer. But it's very prevalent disease, and it's very common for men to get it. It's not at all uncommon, especially men his age.
Why is it that, as I've read here, doctor, prostate cancer is, if you're, you know, it's that macabre statement of if you're going to get a cancer, this could be on your list because it has such a high survival rate. Why is that? Why is it that we are, I don't know, either better at treating prostate cancer, or the cancer itself doesn't have as fatal of an effect writ large as other types of cancer?
It's a bit of both. The reason, one of the main reasons that prostate cancer is easier to treat or has good longevity after treatment is because it's a slow-growing cancer. We have found prostate cancer on autopsy studies in men as young as 18 or 20 years of age, but it takes a long time for that small amount of cancer to become clinically significant. What we look at is what we call the doubling time, and it can take as long as 4 years for prostate cancer to double in size. And so it's a very slow-growing cancer, and that allows us plenty of opportunities to intervene once it's been diagnosed before it has spread, as opposed to, let's say, lung cancer, where it grows rapidly. It has a very rapid course and can spread very fast, so you don't have a lot of time to intervene and when the disease is still early.
What is the conversation someone like the governor is having or will have about whether to have surgery? As I understand it, again, correct me, the main surgery would be what? To remove the prostate?
Correct. And the main surgery would be to remove the prostate and the surrounding lymph nodes and an organ called the seminal vesicle that's attached to the prostate.
So what is the conversation about whether to do that? What are the considerations?
The first consideration is what was his blood test, the PSA or the prostate-specific antigen blood test that he had. And we grouped that into three levels, you know, less than 10, 10 to 20, and over 20. And there was some significance to the level of the blood level of this particular test. The second determinant is the Gleason grade of the cancer. That's only detected on the biopsy tissue. So we obtain biopsy samples of the prostate. That's how the diagnosis is made. And then they grade the cancer based on the pattern of the cancer that they see under the microscope. That grading system was developed by Dr. Donald Gleason, who used to be here at the university many years ago. And the grades are also grouped into three levels, roughly. The grade can extend from a number of 2 to a number of 10, but roughly anything 6 or lower is considered low grade. A grade of 7 is considered medium grade, and a grade of 8, 9, or 10 are together considered high grade. And lastly, on an examination of the prostate using a finger, you can tell if you feel a lump or a hard nodule or a bump, and see if that's confined to the prostate or outside. Combining all of these characteristics and also the number of biopsies that are positive, one can get a fair idea of how aggressive the cancer is. If it's a cancer that's considered low risk or not very aggressive, then one option is to do nothing and watch for a while and see if things change. About half the time, nothing happens, and people die of something else and not of their cancer. And the other half, a change does occur. More cancer is found or a higher grade cancer is found at a later date, so that leads to some sort of treatment.
And Dr. Badra, go ahead. You were going to. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, doctor. You seems like you were going to finish a sentence there.
Yeah, but if it's a mid-grade or a high-grade cancer, mm-hmm. then one would lean more towards intervention right at the outset, and the options include surgery as well as radiation. That's probably the discussion the governor's having right now.
Dr. Badranath Kaneti with me from the University of Minnesota. And as I understand it, the conversation about surgery also includes whether the fix is a bigger problem than the surgery, because as I understand it, there can then be problems with incontinence and erectile function and things like that.
Absolutely. That is correct. And those are the two main concerns. The problem with erectile function, as you can imagine, now, these are older men who already potentially have some issues in that regard due to declining testosterone or aging process and other conditions. But there is a risk of erectile dysfunction whether you get surgery or you get radiation therapy. Incontinence or leakage of urine is more likely to occur with surgery right off the bat, right after the surgery. And generally, over time, things tend to get better. About 80 to 90% of the men will recover their urinary control after about 6 or 8 months, but about 10% will have persistent problems with leakage.
Doctor, I'm fascinated by the word cancer because it seems like the more we learn about it, there's an element here of it almost being problematic because it might suggest that cancers are actually more similar than they really are. I mean, prostate cancer really seems to be a very different disease in so many ways than a breast cancer or brain cancer or lung cancer. So how should we think about that word cancer even going forward?
I think you really hit upon a very good point there, Tom, because even within prostate cancer, we have a whole spectrum of disease. We have the non-aggressive disease at the lower end, and some people are even suggesting we even stop attributing the word cancer to that type of disease because it's really not as aggressive. You're extremely unlikely to die from it. Death rates are under 2%. So we're just scaring people oftentimes by using the word cancer. But the more aggressive varieties of even prostate cancer and other cancers that you mentioned, they tend to behave in a similar fashion. There is something about the biology or the genetics of the disease that it takes a much more aggressive course. It spreads fast and can get all over the body. So the whole idea is to separate those from the less aggressive varieties and treat the ones that really need treatment fast and hard.
Dr. Badranath Kaneti from the University of Minnesota Department of Urology. Very insightful. I learned a lot, and I really appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.